The Open Book on CliffCentral.com.
In the words of the famous author and pastor Rick Warren, who said the following, "The best use of life is love. The best expression of love is time. The best time to love is now." And on that note, I'd like to just welcome all of you to the Open Book right here on Cliff Central. And yes, it is the month of love, literally a few days away to Valentine's Day. But I know that some of to some of us, it is just a sequel to January 2016. But don't be sad if you find yourself in that position, because we have actually all been at that stage at some point in life. And by the way, to those of you who are single, today's show is especially for you. Well, whatever day this is to you, always remember that it is still the day that the Lord has made, so rejoice and be glad in it. Today's topic is Christian dating, and here is why. According to Focus on the Family, the system today's young men and women have inherited for finding and marrying a future spouse leaves a lot to be desired. We often hear complaints from Christians about the confusion, hurt, and sexual sin they've encountered despite their best intentions. Many want to know how they can go about getting to know someone and eventually getting married without getting hurt or even compromising their faith. If you're listening to this podcast, you're probably interested in dating. Either you've done it, you're doing it, you'd like to do it, or you need to teach somebody else how to do it. That's the reason why I'm doing it today. But don't worry, you know, because you're not alone. In our society, dating has become something of an obsession. It has become a sort of a universal phenomenon, something you do if you're single and of age, whatever that age may be that you started dating or you feel like dating. It is considered the natural precursor to marriage, and it is generally considered something to be desired, whatever form it might take. It's also big business, just by the way. If you were to Google the word matchmaker, you would receive about 20 million responses, with a few of these outfits claiming to be Christian, but most kind of making no such claim. And if you Google the word dating, you'll probably get about a million hits. That's how popular dating is, and more especially on the web. As Christians, we are called to be distinct in the way we think and act about all issues that confront us and those around us. This topic is, by the way, is no exception. So, is there such a thing as biblical dating? Some of the questions we're going to be asking today. If so, what is it? How can Christians think differently about this pervasive issue in media and culture? And how far are we doing? How well are we doing so far? The answer to that last question is probably not well. Surveys consistently indicate that professing Christians behave almost kind of exactly the same like non-Christians in terms of sexual involvement outside of marriage, living together before marriage, and infidelity and divorce after marriage. In fact, depending on which statistics one believes, the divorce rate for professing Christians may actually be higher as a whole. Granted, not all of these people are evangelicals, but we are not doing so well either. Indeed, the central issue we need to confront is that when it comes to dating and relationships, perhaps more than in any other area of the everyday Christian life, the church is largely indistinguishable from the world. That truth has brought immeasurable emotional pain and other consequences to many Christians. Worse, it has brought great dishonor to the name of Christ and to the witness of individuals and the church. It doesn't have to be this way. For Christians, the Lord has given us His Word, and the Holy Spirit helps us to understand it. We have brothers and sisters in Christ to hold us accountable and to help us apply the Word to our lives. People have been through this many and many times before. As a matter of fact, some of these people are my guests for today. In studio, I have Mark Paul, who is a worship and pastor at Eastside Community Church in Pretoria, a young man that I've admired for a very, very long time in the way that he leads his life. And we also have David and Gina Mutenji, who are both worship and youth leaders at Rhema Bible Church in Randburg. It is a show all about love, starting from dating. So make a point and stay with us as we approach this subject in depth right here on The Open Book, Cliff Central.
The Open Book on CliffCentral.com.
And so our topic today is Christian dating. And in studio with me, I have Mark Paul, pastor of Eastside Community Church in Pretoria. He actually looks much younger than what you guys probably think. He's a bit gray though. I don't know where that came from. I think that's one of those guys who kind of go gray at like 23.
That's why I wear a cap.
Huh? That's why I wear a cap. Yeah. It looks good at you. Thank you so much, man, for coming.
Sure, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and then I also have David and Gina Mutenji. A couple got married like a few months ago.
Yeah, 5 months to be exact. 5 months.
5 months to be exact.
Yeah, 5 months and 4 days.
That's oh, crazy. Wow. Yeah. You're still counting the days?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know why you're still counting the days?
Why?
That's like when you have a child, right? And first of all, you count in days and then you're counting in months before you start counting in years.
Yeah.
So I hope that God is going to keep you guys till you start counting in decades.
Oh.
You know what I mean? We've been together for about 3 decades now.
Yeah, I don't plan on living that long.
3 decades, you're only going to be like 50.
Good point, I didn't realize it.
Mark, let's start with you.
Sure.
You know, let's start with the past himself. So, I mean, there is so much out there. You know, I was kind of looking through the net and trying to see how much is there in dating. And there is quite a lot. Mm. I think both from the Christian side and also from the secular side, about different ways and how to date. They admit that there are a lot of dating sites. But what I want to know is that, does the Bible say anything about dating?
No.
It doesn't?
No.
People never used to date?
Well, I'm sure they did.
Yeah.
But it doesn't say in the book of Law, Esau chapter 3 verse 1, that thou shalt date and thou shalt. But I think, I mean, dating is at its core about relationship. And the Bible says a whole lot about relationships. It says a whole lot about the way we should treat each other. It speaks about the way we should love others, the way we should love ourselves, which I think is a huge thing. I mean, I don't know if we're going to speak about that a lot this morning, but the kind of way that we see ourselves in relationships, I think has a lot of effect on whether relationships, dating relationships, marriages, I'm sure, I mean, you guys are new at it, so you can say a whole lot about that stuff.
I think they know more about dating than marriage.
Yeah, when you start something, you think you know everything, and then you realize that it's not so cute anymore when he leaves the towel on the floor or when she doesn't pack the dishes away.
Whoa!
And then you realize life gets you. The Bible isn't clear, Lorisa, about dating or how we should do it. And I think even you're speaking about opinions that are out there, even if we should, because I think they're probably opinions that, you know, you should go straight to kind of what I think we'll speak about later, courting, or even straight to, you know, some people meet and 2 weeks later they're engaged. And
but what happened back then? You know what I mean? Because obviously the Bible didn't speak about it. Chances are it never used to happen a lot. If you look at like the story of Jacob, you know, for instance, he had to go ask the father, you know, to go ask the father for what is the name again? For her hand, we'll just call her for now, and then he worked for 7 years.
He got the wrong woman.
He got the wrong woman. Was he blind? I don't know. You know what I mean? And then to work like an additional 7 years to then eventually get the right woman.
Yeah.
How did dating even exist in the Bible?
Well, it did. I mean, there would have had to be, because if we're talking about dating, we're talking about a process of people who are in a relationship with the goal ultimately, and I think this is maybe where it's changed over generations, the goal ultimately of something developing. I think then it would have been much more like what we would speak of courting now.
Yeah.
And it was a lot more, I think, official. I know that there was a process of kind of, especially the engagement period would be a year, and the Bible speaks about a woman leaving her father and mother. So in that generation, in that culture, it wasn't like now, you know, we go to varsity and we go to res or we stay in digs and we got our own place and then we move in together, and times were different then.
Yeah.
So specifically, I don't know so much, to be honest, about the dating, but I know the process of now this relationship is getting serious and we're going to get married. There was a process of a husband, as you say, asking for permission for the wife, and then he would have time. Usually it was a year in the culture to go and prepare a home for his wife. That's why it's different with the 7 years. And then he landed up with Leah. And I remember David Malapa saying, when he saw, he's like, Leah, because she wasn't the pretty one. So that would have been a slightly
unusual. He still stayed with her.
He still stayed with her.
Yeah. 7 years.
Marriage.
You know, these guys have been together for 5 months.
Yeah.
7 years is I'm sure it must be a long time.
Yeah.
You know?
It's not a long time.
It's not a long time.
7 years goes quickly.
Well, how long have you been married?
9 years.
You've been married for 9 years?
Yeah.
That is amazing. Yeah. And you have a, you guys have like a 2-3 year old?
Yeah, he's almost 3 in April.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So we waited a while to have a little boy.
That's probably a good thing, you know.
Yeah.
I think people should also wait up until they're married before they have children.
All my friends say that I have to stop being a little boy first before I could have one.
That's good. I guess that's the good thing about getting married young. You know, the fact that you can actually enjoy, you know, each other's company and get to know, you know, but the things that you all like before a child gets thrust into the whole thing.
Because a child changes everything.
It definitely changes everything. It makes the whole thing like new. Mm. Either new or old. I can't actually quite decide what it is exactly.
Well, it makes you old.
You spoke about, yeah. you spoke about courtship, right? How relevant is that in today's times?
I think the word is probably irrelevant. I think the word is, especially like in this context where you've got people from different worldviews and people from different backgrounds, the word probably conjures up a whole lot of images of kind of archaic opinions. And when I think courtship, I think of like old-fashioned clothing, and I think of those men that used to wear wigs. But I think if you look at what courtship is, it's really just the process of kind of deciding, is this something that is going to turn into marriage?
Yeah.
So I think even though the word is irrelevant, the concept is, whether we acknowledge it or not, whether we're even aware of it or not, is still part of our cultural framework. In that, as soon as a conversation starts, so with you guys, I mean, you were dating, and then the kind of temperature of relationship would have changed, and you would have started speaking about, well, are we going to get married? Is this something we should speak about? Is this something? And whether you want to put the label courtship to it or not, I think that's what it was. It's about trying to decide, is this going to turn into something more than it is?
Do you know what I think? I think courtship should be made just as, how can I say it again? Like, you know, just as official as getting engaged. Because we kind of see courtship as the time when you engage before you get married. But the thing is, there's a lot in that time. I mean, for instance, I was engaged for a year. And we had put the date. We said, okay, we're going to get married in a year's time. Put the date forward of what we're going to do. And trust you me, it's not just about, you know, like, it's not just about you guys getting to know each other. It is all about the wedding. And by the time you get there, it seems like you just didn't have enough time.
Engagement period is hell.
Yeah.
It is. So I think that, you know, we need to go to a stage where you can actually tell your parents and say, listen, this is the person that I'm courting, that and we're thinking about marriage. And then it becomes official, because a lot of times you find that, like, you know, parents are not going to take you seriously in your dating period up until you actually get engaged with someone, you know. How was it? I mean, like, how was it for you guys when you guys started going out? Did your parents know immediately? And your parents are pastors.
Yeah, both of our parents are both pastors.
Oh, but, Lord, you mean like the mother and the father?
Yeah, both.
So you got four pastors in the house.
Basically. And I think for us, what was really cool was the relationship was always in our hands. And that was really amazing, is that our parents really trust us to make the right decisions in terms of the people we date. And I think in terms of how it happened with us is, we were really good friends before.
So and
before,
that's a good thing,
before we started dating, we were friends for like, what, 2 years?
Yeah.
And so we're really good friends, really close. And then we started dating. And so it was actually really funny that, even before we started dating, both of our parents were kind of like, they knew, and we only found out about it afterwards, but they were like, yo, we knew you two were going to start dating. So it was, they weren't like saying, yo, God prophesied you guys were going to get married.
Or maybe they kind of saw it, because every time you laughed, you'd like touch your shoulder.
Well, I think everyone had cheated you guys. So, I mean, the writing was on the wall.
It's like, I can see what's happening. What?
And
you guys too young to know that?
Yeah. Thanking, of course.
Okay.
And, and I think when we actually, like, decided we were going to get married, it wasn't like only when we got engaged. It was like way before, like probably a year even before we got engaged.
Okay.
The courtship, if you want to use that word, started happening, where we're kind of like, look, I see you in my life for a really long time and I want to spend my life with you. Do you feel the same way? Because I think a lot of the times movies kind of lie to you. Like when the guy proposes, the girl is like super surprised, like, oh my goodness, I had no idea. Maybe she didn't know that like he was going to propose on that day.
On that day, yeah.
But to propose to someone that you've never had the conversation about courtship with, I think is insane.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, like, imagine Loi saw, I was just like, hey, Loi, will you marry me right now? You'd be like,
no.
So it's almost like before
I'm married.
when you propose, you should know that they're definitely going to say yes. So the proposal is more of like a romantic gesture now these days, because the discussion does happen a lot earlier. It should happen because you're basically planning your life together. And back in the day, or even in the Bible times, women didn't really have a say in who they got married to. So that whole courtship or dating season actually didn't really mean anything to the woman, because she didn't have a say in who she got married or whether she liked the person or how they're going to live, where they're going to live. They didn't really have a say in that. So today we live in a culture where actually you should, both parties should be engaging and should be discussing those things and planning for the future. So by the time you get engaged, it's just more of a romantic gesture.
Absolutely.
Than, oh my goodness, now on this moment, at this specific time, I have to decide whether I'm going to marry you or not. And you would have had that discussion before that.
I think it should start from the very moment you say, I love you. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I don't think people should be throwing those phrases out if they're not intending to marry someone. Mm. So, ladies, when he says, I love you, and then you should actually say, so what, you're going to marry me? You know what I mean?
That's just
going
to be real.
And that's determined.
Yeah.
Every guy listening is like, whoa, slow down.
Now, here's the other question, right? Should every partner for a Christian be a potential life partner? Because the Austin will end up just kind of going... You know, going around.
Well, let's ask the girl first, because I think it's different.
Because some people start dating at 12, and I'm not going to have my daughter get married at 14.
Yeah. I do think dating helps you learn about yourself and what you prefer in the opposite sex or whatever it is, in the partner that you're looking for. But I do think that you should, when you get into a serious dating relationship, we talk about... seeing as just casual kind of dating, like when you're a teenager and you're crushing on someone in high school or whatever. But then when you start seriously dating someone, you're committing your life to them, or you're committing that season of your life to them. The intention should be marriage, because what are you working towards if you're not? And things then do happen. So whether it works or it doesn't work, your intention initially should be for the long run.
This is when you're old enough.
Yeah.
Well, yes, when you're ready to be in a serious relationship.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I think how we define it in our youth group is a little bit differently. Because young people want to be with the people that they like, you know, in terms of a relationship. So, we're not going to say that from 18, that's the only time you're allowed to even start speaking to girls, because that's not realistic. And so what we've kind of realized is that a lot of young people like to see one another, you know, in terms of like going out and going to the movies and holding hands and all of those things. But what we really see as dating is when there is a certain sacrifice that you're giving up to be in a relationship, you know. So a lot of the times when you're a lot younger, like, you're not really sacrificing anything. Your parents are still paying for your dinners. Your parents are still taking you out. You're able to hold her hand and then hold someone else's hand, and then your relationship about breaks off like that. And so that's not necessarily seen as dating, because I think dating really comes in when you understand the reason for it, you know? And so we kind of say, you can see, like, from whatever age your parents and you're comfortable with, seeing is okay, but when you're ready to start dating, then the end goal should be, what am I planning to do with this person? And so that's not going to happen within the first week. So we're not saying that you only date the people that you're going to marry, because you don't know that person, and you need time to get to know that person.
Yeah.
And so,
but at least at a certain point, the intention needs to be there.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. So the intention and communicating that intention.
Yeah. Yeah.
I find, and I don't know, you know, you're a closer man, Luis, so I don't know.
He does CrossFit.
So I don't know what it was like, kind of maybe culturally for you growing up, but I find now with a lot of younger adults, it's like seven steps and it's complicated. Mm. Like when I was a teenager especially and then a younger adult,
yeah,
you were either friends or you were in a relationship or you were engaged in marriage. There were like three phases. Now there's like all of these other steps along the way that I just think make things complicated.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, no,
and
you're
also,
right.
Like, people don't like to put a label on things. I've never understood that. A lot of people that date, like, no, you can see they're in a dating relationship. They're sacrificing. They're loving each other. They're hanging out. But they don't want to put a label on it. Because as soon as you put a label on it, you have to put commitment with it. And people are afraid of committing.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, like, do you know what I really liked about what you said, David? Is the fact that you've got to be willing then to start sacrificing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And whereas, like, I think people get into... when you get into relationships, is because we are now ready to start gaining.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah, that's the one.
It's like
yeah.
you know to start fulfilling a certain desire that you have.
Yeah.
I just got a message from Gabby here. This is on WeChat, and she says, Christians marry young so that they can start bumping. As it happens.
Well, well yes.
True.
The Bible does advise.
Well,
you can't contain yourself.
That's definitely not a lie. I don't think it is. Because, well, we got married at what? I was 26.
Yeah, I was 27.
Yeah. So, and we got married. And I think, look, there are certain boundaries that are in place for you to protect yourself and to protect one another.
Yeah.
And I think during the dating phase, sex is definitely... a massive part of dating in terms of whether you're doing it or whether you're thinking about doing it or whether it's like frowned upon and all of those things. And so when you do get married and Christian young people get married, not just because of sex, but sex is a benefit to marriage, you know. And so a lot of the times young people get it the opposite way. They think that to have sex, they need to get married. But it's when you are married, you get to have sex.
Yeah.
And so the focus is placed on the wrong thing. And so we've only been married for like 5 months, so I'm not giving out like marriage advice. But I think for me, it's really, you need to know the person that you're going to be with for hopefully the rest of your life and not just think about the sex that you're going to be having. I don't know if...
And
that's
good,
just me.
Because you're the guy.
Yeah, I'm the guy, exactly.
You know how guys
exactly.
are. How guys are from Mars and women are from,
well,
exactly.
I don't really believe it. I don't think it's just a guy thing. I think girls are just much better at hiding it.
Yes, that's very true.
Okay. I think we're just, maybe we're not very good at kind of keeping those things in our guy circles, so we talk about it. But I don't... I mean, I think what Gabby is saying, it's Gabby, yeah, that messaged it in. I think it's a very good point. Like, Christians are getting married young, and I think that's a big reason. I don't think it's wise.
I think you're right.
I don't think age has got much to do with this thing at all. I mean, I know really young people, we spoke about someone earlier. I mean, if you're 20 and you're in a relationship and you know that you know that you know, why wait?
Mm.
I mean, if everything is in place, it needs to be in place. Likewise, if you're 35 or you're 45 and you haven't found that person, what's the rush?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm worried about kind of the time pressure that culture and it's Christian culture is putting on people to get married young, and I don't think that stuff should be in the top of our kind of priorities.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. But I don't think it actually does that, because you know the reason you remember the ones who got married young is because there are just so few, you know, amongst many Christians. I mean, if you go to like a singles meeting, for instance, that chapel is packed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like over 25.
It's not like, you know? And also, you know, if you go to Christian weddings when that song starts playing, oh, the single ladies, for when she's about to throw that bouquet. Mm. There are a lot of ladies out there.
Well, there
are
a lot, but have you noticed how slow people are to kind of put up their hand and say, yeah, I am. I'm 26 and 27. I'm not married yet. Like, there's a stigma attached to it.
You're right.
Oh, my goodness. What's wrong with you?
No, you're right. As in, you know, like, and yet the greatest, okay, not that, you know, one is greater than the other, but in my opinion, the greatest apostle ever, which was Paul, you know, who wrote a third of the New Testament. He was... You know, he was single. The greatest guy ever. I mean, let's take Jesus Christ.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
At 33, was still single.
You like Jesus. It's like, that's a good thing, you know?
Yeah.
But obviously, as he says, I think actually I've got that verse over here. 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 8 and 9, which Paul says, "But I say to the unmarried and to widows that it is good for them if they remain even as I," because he was obviously single. But if they do not have self-control, let them marry, for it is better to marry than to burn. I want to talk about sexual purity during dating. We're going to go into an ad break, and we'll be back after this.
This is CliffCentral.com. Choice. Sometimes you have it, and sometimes you don't. AutoTrader gives you the choice. Now you can shop, compare, and buy new cars. Watch our expert video reviews and research before you buy. AutoTrader New Car. The choice is yours. The Open Book on CliffCentral.com.
Sexual purity is quite a bit, you know, like it is quite a big thing amongst Christians. And it should be, you know, because I think one of the things that absolutely mess up people, especially when they married, it's their sexual experiences before they got married. This is an absolute fact, you know. Like when you married and then you go somewhere and then you see that girl that you had sex with before you got married, it kind of messes up a little bit, you know, a little bit with you. But obviously, you know, there's certain things that we cannot, you know, we cannot absolutely stop. It's going to be absolutely up to you to do that, to either stop or to gain the biblical understanding of how it is that you can, yeah, that you can kind of stop yourself from that absolute temptation. Let me start with you, Pastor Mark Paul. Mark Paul sounds like
a superhero name.
It sounds like, yeah, either superhero or the Pope, you know? Pope Mark Pope. Paul.
Same thing.
Pope Mark Paul II. Is that your real name, or did you just make that up when you became a pastor?
That is my first name and my second name.
Ah.
And then I have a surname.
What's your surname? Van Niekerk or Van Riebeek or...
Woordendaal.
Woordendaal, there
you
go.
You weren't far from
it. I thought it... So, keys to sexual purity in dating.
Well, I want to go back first to something you said just now, that it's a fact that kind of having multiple sexual partners or having a sexual relationship before marriage kind of messes things up for marriage. And I suspect that there's probably a fairly large portion of people listening that disagree with that statement.
Yeah.
Because I think most people are so kind of in their bubble, in their relationship, and of their experiences. And that's one of the things where I think as pastors and in the context of counseling relationships, we get to see a lot of a bigger picture. And I think for people that kind of sit in churches week after week, they probably don't know this, that a lot of what you hear being preached from the pulpit, a lot of what you hear being addressed comes out of a counseling environment because we're able to see what people are going through. And I have had in my ministry and my encounters with people just time after time after time where marriages start and people think this is going to be this great thing, like we've been married and yeah, like maybe we've had a sexual relationship either with each other or with other people before, but we're going to get married and everything's going to be fine. And then suddenly 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month after the wedding, like they come in and they're like, this is just not working.
Yeah.
And then it's, you're going in with baggage, and any situation in life, whether it's business, whether it's relationships, whether it's financial stuff, if you go into something with a whole lot of baggage and a whole lot of nonsense, it's going to weigh you down and it's going to cause issues. And so that's why I think it is so important that we have the conversation about sexual purity. And for people that for whom that is not necessarily their worldview, that they consider, well, what does this actually mean for me? And what is my goal in relationships one day? And where do I want to be? And what do I want my marriage to look like? So after that rant, I've actually forgotten your question.
Oh, no, but that's perfectly fine. Because you know what? I mean, like, you know what it is, right? Like, before I recommitted my life, you know, my life to Christ, obviously, you know, me and my wife were not exactly, and then we started going for counseling, and then we stopped, yeah. You know, we absolutely stopped. And you know what? And something happened within those, nine to 10 months before we obviously get married and now we're allowed to do, you know, to have sex again. I started seeing her for who she is, you know, and not a bad thing at all. But sometimes when you're having sex with different partners, not just the Christians, you start actually, instead of choosing a life partner, you start choosing the right sexual partner. And that can be dangerous because sex can absolutely mar your view. I mean, like your view on someone, you know? When you think that they're good in bed, you start thinking that they're actually, they're just the greatest people ever. And then what probably also starts to happen is that when you then find that great person who's obviously not a freak in the bed like the other girl or the other guy that you were with, and then suddenly it starts affecting your relationship with that person. Mm-hmm. So I think just from that point alone, and this is to Christians and to non, you know, like, and to those and to future Christians, not non-Christians. rather don't mess, you know, like, really, by all means, rather don't mess with that. And if he truly loves you, he will wait. You know,
or she will wait. Yeah. And I think also the biggest stigma attached to sex when I know when I was still in high school, and was the whole thing of like, yeah, but you need to learn so that when you get married, you're good at it. And I was always a little bit like, because it kind of makes sense. Like, when you're like
you want to be
yeah,
human.
Yeah, you know, because all my guy friends are like, oh, you know, well, how are you going to know where to put it? And all of those connotations to it. You know what I mean? And you're laughing, but like, you know, and so, but I think what a lot of people forget to realize is that, if you're busy, like, teaching yourself, like you're having sex and you're learning, and by the time you get into your relationship and maybe the other person hasn't been learning, now it's almost a thing of like there's an imbalance with that equation. Yeah, you know,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so the thing about marriage is, especially with sex, is it's amazing to learn from each other. Mm-hmm. And so it's almost like you're both starting at grade one and you're kind of getting there, because now if I know what I like because I've had sex 10 times and she doesn't give it to me, now I think that she's bad at sex, and then that already causes a little bit of a imbalance, because now you're seeing and going, well, I remember how Rebecca used to do it, and now my wife isn't doing it like Rebecca, so now
I think,
like,
I think it's worse when you start thinking that, you know, like when you start thinking that your wife is Rebecca.
Wait, who's Rebecca?
I don't know. It was just a random name. You know, and so I think, yeah, you know, I think just practically speaking, if we're not even getting into the spiritual aspect those other funny things that Christian people say, that's definitely one big area to kind of think about, you know?
Yeah.
And I also think, look, we've only been married for 5 months, and
it's good.
It is good.
I know people got married for 91 days. Carry on.
But marriage actually isn't about sex. Sex is a bonus. Marriage is about so much more than that, and many people think that marriage is all about sex. You have sex like 3 times a day, every day of the week, and it's realistically not like that.
That's just honeymoon
for the first 5 months.
Yeah, that's honeymoon. We're still on honeymoon.
But I think that's the image that people see in movies, music, magazines, everything, and it's not realistic. And if you're putting all your focus on sex, then you're missing so much more that person can actually grow you in, and how you can help that person. So sex is just a bonus. It's not the main concern.
But I think for a lot of people, they think that's the only thing that is good about marriage, because often the perception is that marriage is about fighting and about, it's just sacrifice, and it's just about washing and
then we can just make
dishes
up.
And
they say makeup sex is best. Check, I'm like, they say.
They say. Who's they?
Yeah, okay. I'm speaking about Christian dating. Here's another question to throw at you guys. So what is the appropriate level of intimacy before marriage?
Sure.
Yeah, we get this question all the time because we run a relationship course with our teenagers.
Yeah.
And it would be great if the Bible told us exactly where we should stop, but unfortunately it doesn't. And I think dating is all about boundaries. And if you can set your boundary before you enter a relationship, not while you're in the relationship, not while you're experimenting,
that's right,
before you actually get into it, that you should be able to do that, because once you're in it, it's very difficult to decide, because your emotions are going crazy, your hormones are going crazy. And so we teach the scale of touch, which basically goes all the way from holding hands straight up to full-on sex. And we actually ask teenagers, where would you feel comfortable stopping? And usually they give us the answer we would like to hear, which is always like, oh, French kissing or making out. But we all know in their minds they're like three steps ahead. But unfortunately, you can't really say what the boundary for every person is. Every person is different. Some person might be aroused by intimate hugging or kissing. Okay. And someone might be aroused just by a touch on your ear or whatever it is. So I think it's very difficult to put down that boundary, but you need to set a boundary. So for whoever you are, you need to be setting that boundary before you enter your relationship. And sticking to that boundary is very important. And a lot of people fold back on their boundary because of the other person's boundary.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, for example, if I'm only comfortable with intimate kissing and David is comfortable with, I don't
spooning.
Know, like whoever has the stronger conviction, that's where your boundary should be.
Yeah.
Or whoever has the higher boundary, that's where your boundary should be. So no one should ever be put in a position where they're compromising their boundary.
Where do most people put their, you know, like put their boundaries? Because someone could like literally say, okay, cool, well, it was dry sex, but it wasn't sex. But
well, it was oral sex, but it's not sex. Yeah. Cause
most of
the word sex is in it. I think that's where, I mean, you guys are working with teenagers, but I think that's probably where people's boundaries are at.
Yeah. Yeah, like a lot it's of people's really boundaries is like,
face.
Yeah, it's like, I'm like, because I think we're very open people. So like, a lot of the times people are like, no, sex is only when part A enters part B. If that isn't really happening, that's what a lot of the young people think sex is. And that's like, that's our boundary. And we're going, well, anything kind of like, even like oral sex, you know, it's like if it involves genitalia, you know, that there's no way a lot of the times, because once you've overcome that step, you kind of think, well, then what's the next step? That's really nothing.
It's such a hard one because I mean, I can even think that like French kissing for me is very intimate.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And also if you're going to be kissing for like half an hour, 45 minutes, that's going to lead you towards something, you know?
Yeah.
What is your view on sort of like, on how much time we can actually spend together? And also spending time together alone, because that can also be pretty tempting as well.
Yes.
I think especially when you're younger, like, because so many, as we're talking about these things, so many of this, like, it's not an isolated issue.
Yeah.
It's got to do with, like, when you're speaking about those boundaries. I mean, that's, a lot of those boundaries are not put in place because I don't know that teenagers are being taught how to communicate properly.
Mm-hmm.
So then you're going into a conversation about communication. If you start talking about how much time can you spend together, can you be alone? I mean, the amount of young relationships that I've encountered kind of in the last couple of years where this couple get together and they become each other's world. And then 2 years down the line, they go, actually, this is not weird. It's not working.
Mm.
The relationship ends. None of them have any friends. Everyone's moved on because they're spending so much time together. They actually don't know how to be. And you said it earlier, Gina. I mean, it's about, for me, it's about when you are ready in yourself, when you know who you are, then I think you're able to commit to a long-term relationship. And especially for younger guys, younger girls, teenagers, young adults. And I kind of think that age is getting a bit older with every generation, for whatever reason. Don't be spending all your time together until you're going, okay, this is actually, we're going to spend the rest of our lives.
And you know why? Because once you're married, man, you don't get the opportunity to have that balance between your friends and your spouse. So
you're 100% right.
And go to church as much as, just do the things that you want to do. Study as much as you want.
Yeah.
Because in marriage,
your
spouse is going to come first.
Yeah. And you know what, Lloyd? Like, also the important thing is dating. You should never be in isolation, you know, because a lot of the times when you're in a relationship and you see someone, it's almost like they're your world, like there's nothing wrong with them. And even when they do something wrong, it's so hard for you to accept that, oh my goodness, this other person is hurting me. And so when you kind of have a community of friends that you trust, for example, if you've had you know, your best friend for like 7 years, or your mom and your dad, or your brother and your sister that are a part of your relationship, as in they get to see this other person and they get to know this other person, mm-hmm. then they can almost, it gives them the opportunity to give you advice and from a place of love. But when you're in that place of just you in your own relationship with this person, it's almost like there's no room for constructive criticism, because mm. both of you guys are just in isolation. And so when there is an issue, you feel like I can't go speak to this person because they won't understand, because they're not in my relationship. Mm. And that's what we get with a lot of young people. Guys and girls get brainwashed by the people that they're in a relationship with, because they just keep them to themselves. It's almost like, no, you are mine and I am yours, and your parents don't matter and your friends don't matter. And when you do that relationship does end, like Mark said, like all of a sudden your whole world is shattered, because you have no one else to kind of confide in, because you've already had that person, you know, and that's very dangerous.
And I also think that it's important when you are dating, like David's saying, regarding not being in isolation, I think it's important to see your partner in different environments. Because a lot of the times what happens is if you're just going to their house and that's the only environment you see them in, you don't get to see who that person truly is. How are they with their friends? How are they with your friends? How do they treat their parents? How are they in a stressful situation? Mm-hmm. How are they in a happy situation? Because then you get an all-rounded view of who that person really is. And what happens a lot of the time is you only get to see one side of that person, and then you end up committing your life to them. And then,
living with them.
Yes, and then married people end up saying, you're not the person I married. Yeah, and
wow,
you're like,
gets
but how?
Drunk really badly.
Exactly. Exactly. Small things like that.
Because I was like, no, it's fine. I mean, like, you know, I take a glass of wine now and then. But wow, brother, that is like 2 bottles.
Yeah, that's a big glass.
Okay, enough about drinking and sex. I want to, you know, after the break, I want to speak about, you know, the spiritual aspect of relationships.
The Open Book on CliffCentral.com.
Christian dating is probably a subject that we can speak about for days on end. More so because not a lot of it appears on the and not a lot about the subject appears in the Bible, or else we could just get here and just discuss a whole lot of verses and tell people what it is that they need to do and what they don't need to do. But one specific verse, you know, speaks about being unevenly yoked, and obviously that's not while you're in the relationship. Doesn't mean that you must be unevenly in the relationship, but that's probably the partner that you choose. Should be, you know, you kind of should be at the same level. But I want to get maybe from you, Mark, what exactly that verse means when it says, "Do not be unevenly yoked."
It's great Christianese.
Yeah, I know there's an album called called Yoked. Like, what, yolk from an egg?
well, the yoked actually has to do with kind of steering cattle. Like connecting the cattle with it was like a bar, like a wooden pole thing that would keep the cows in the same direction. But the context, I mean, we don't need to know what that means, but the context of it is just, you've got to be like on the same wavelength. You've got to have the same like worldview, morals, ethics, same. I think relationships are just difficult. Mm. Like anyone that comes and tells me that they've been married for 10 years and it's just been a dream the whole way, like, you're lying, man. Because life is, there are struggles. You've got to work out. I mean, you have financial struggles. You've got in-laws. I've got great in-laws, so I don't know about that. But you've got people. You've got life. Relationships are generally difficult. And my advice to people is always choose the easiest possible way to have a relationship.
Yeah.
And if you believe severely different things, and I've got a friend that the husband and wife are two different religions, and that's just, it brings so much conflict. So when the scripture speaks about do not be unevenly yoked, to put it into kind of language that we can understand today, it's saying just be on the same page.
Yeah. Doesn't necessarily mean like, you know, don't be a believer and get together with a non-believer.
Which, yes, well, that's what it means, because, but I think it's so much, it's actually deeper than that, because I think you can both be believers and be unevenly yoked.
Yeah.
You guys, what do you have to say? You yoked people evenly?
Yeah, we're very evenly
you
yoked.
You twos, fours, sixes, and eights, and tens, and twelves.
Yeah, I think for us, what we've seen is in terms of what the Bible's saying there is, possibly like have the same foundations, you know, very similar foundations. But the best example and the easiest example I can give is kind of like, if you like going to church on a Sunday morning, right? That's who you are. You love it. And you're in a relationship with someone who doesn't like going to church on Sunday morning, or someone who likes to go clubbing on a Friday night. And then those two things are, you fight about those two things. If that's who you are foundationally, and that's who they are foundationally, you're always going to fight about it. Like on a Friday night, you're like, I don't want to go to the club. And she's like, I want to go to the club. And then on a Sunday morning, you're like, well, I want to go to church. And she's like, I don't want to go to church.
Yeah.
That's always going to be a fight. And it's not necessarily because you're a believer or whatever. It's just that's, I think, and you want to avoid having constant fight about the same thing, because then eventually it's like, oh, I don't want to be in this relationship.
You know what? You know what I think? I think even in a relationship, you're going to have to be constantly trying to yoke that thing.
Yes.
One, it's about finding the balance.
Mm. Yes.
It's going to be about sacrifice.
Yes.
It's going to be about compromise.
Yeah.
And the best relationships are when the two of you are actually in a great mind.
Exactly.
Because something great can happen when two minds meet together.
Yeah.
And I guess also, like, you know, that's what marriage is. And that's why marriage is so much more powerful, if I can say that.
Yeah.
Last question, and I'll start with Gina. Gina,
yes.
How do you know? Because so many people are like, bro, I'm telling you, I've been with this girl for 2 weeks, but I'm telling you now that this
she's the one.
This one, she's the one.
She's the one.
She's the one. How did you know that he is the one?
Is he the one?
Yes, I still believe he is.
How do you know? I mean, like, how long when you guys are going to know that he's the one?
It was kind of weird because I knew before we started dating. So right. That's a once-off. That doesn't happen a lot. I think it's because we were friends for such a long time. But I think it's twofold. I think the first thing is that you'll have peace about it. And the second thing is that people will witness with your relationship. So many times you speak to people who they believe this is the one, but all their friends and family totally disagree. And that is a true indication that that person isn't meant for you. And I really believe that God would use the people in your life to confirm whether that person is the right person for you or not.
Oh, yeah. Pastor Mark?
I think you got to know what you want. I was telling Jason earlier this morning, I went to look at some cars. Well, I went to a dealership, and I wanted that car at the beginning of the year. And the sales lady came to me, she's like, well, before we look at that car, why don't we sit down and tell me what you want in a car? And I was like, well, I want that car. And she's like, no, well, let's talk about it. And I gave her a list of some things that, like, my ideal car would be this. And she's like, well, that car that you're looking at only has one of these eight things. She's like, so actually you don't want that car. And I think a lot of people go into relationships thinking they know what they want, but actually they don't. And until you know that is what the one, and I don't think the one necessarily exists, and until you know what your one looks like, don't be looking for the one. First figure out what is it that you want in a life partner.
Very nice.
But you know what, the Bible also said, like, you know, seek ye first the kingdom of God and all these things shall be added to you. So I believe also that, like, you know, the stronger your relationship is with God, the more you're actually going to know, because obviously then you can feel, you know, the Holy Spirit saying that this is the one. And I'm not trying to be all spiritual, but I am, okay? but maybe that is the safest way of knowing that this is the one. And usually your intuitions, it's not just your intuitions, but it's the spirit inside of you speaking. We're gonna pick this, you know, we're gonna pick the subject up at some point, at some time. But thank you to all three of you for coming through today. And
thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Bye. The Open Book on cliffcentral.com.